Good afternoon. Again, the case is Kasson. Is that right? Kasson or Kasson?
Kasson.
Kasson. Thank you. Kasson versus Kasson.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Avis Andrews. I represent the appellant father in this matter. This is a case in which the parties had two children and operated under a joint physical and legal custody arrangement for approximately 9 years prior to the incident leading to this action. In April of 2012, the younger child, who is the subject of this action, had a hospitalization and in the course of that made some allegations concerning my client, which were, of course, very serious allegations. However, since that time, they have been investigated thoroughly by Child Protective Services, by his employer, by law enforcement, and have not been substantiated. So at the time of trial, the court made a finding that there is no credible evidence that my client is an unfit parent. He also indicated that he had serious concerns regarding the veracity of the child and her claims against the child, or the father, and that her allegations were either untrue or greatly exaggerated, and that my client had and always had been a loving and caring parent. However, the order of the court, in essence, cut off my client from his child, and in reality, he has been cut off from that child since that April 2012 incident. The application to modify the decree was brought, I believe, in June, shortly after that incident, and a no-contact order issued by the court that remained in effect until January of 2014, at which time it was eliminated, and my client was awarded reasonable visitation. Not surprisingly, that never happened because there was not an agreement between the parents. Then in June of 2014, when this matter came before the court declined to award my client any court-ordered parenting time, but did say that nothing prevents the minor child from initiating parenting time if she chooses. So in essence, my client, for one reason or the other, has been denied his parenting time and his actually parenting abilities with this child for the past 3 years. Therefore, it is our position that the decision of the trial court was an abuse of discretion for several different reasons. First of all, we would suggest to the court that there should not have been a finding that there was sufficient grounds to modify the decree to start with. The father was not found to be unfit and specifically was found to be a fit parent.
Isn't the problem with this case, and I say this as a parent, and this is a very difficult set of facts for the reason that it's really not a reflection on your client, but I think the court was faced with what is in the best interest of the child, and for whatever reason, this child has a fear that causes her to not want to be around him. And so, even if you order a 17-year-old child, maybe an 18-year-old child now to do something, there's no guarantee that anything is going to happen. And so how do we not look at this as what was in the best interest of the child?
Your Honor, I would say a couple things. First of all, I'd refer back to the court's finding that he found the allegations of the child to be untrue or greatly exaggerated. So to say that, she says that she has fear of her father needs to be, I believe, scrutinized, because I think there's other evidence that indicates perhaps the child had other motivations. I think one that is pretty clear is that she didn't like the rules at her father's home. Also, after the father was out of the picture, her behavior didn't improve. In fact, it deteriorated to the point where she was getting in trouble with the law. She was getting in trouble at school. In fact, picked up additional diagnosis when she was in exclusive care of her mother. And I would also suggest to the court that almost unanimously, the professionals that testified in that case indicated that it was important to the child that the parents have a united front, that they work together for the best interests of this child, and this is not allowed by the ruling of this court. I think the evidence indicates that the father had some ideas on how to address these problems, most clearly in his suggestion that Family Bridges program be implemented and the child undergo a rather intensive therapeutic program to try and get her on a better path. The mother, of course, was not willing to do that, and with the father having no legal say-so, that is not going to happen. So we would suggest to the court that it's not in the best interest of the minor child to take her father out of the equation and to leave it up to the child and put that burden on her to determine when, if ever, she's going to have that relationship with her child.
Was there any recommendation made for, I know there was like the 90-day piece that he wanted, but was there any recommendation made to have some sort of therapeutic supervised parenting time as a transitional?
Well, ironically, I think the only recommendation of that came from the mother, and that was not also not included in the order. But there had been some very limited therapeutic contact between the child and the father over the course of this 2+ years.
But that had not gone very well, had it?
It did not seem to be very effective. That's true. And it's hard to say from the record or from the testimony why that was. I would suggest to the court that the record indicates that the child may have had her own agenda in this situation. I think there's some reference to her being able to manipulate different situations, and that's not to say she doesn't have some serious issues that need to be addressed, but our point would be that it's an abuse of discretion by the trial court to not allow her father to be a part of that.
That evidence was all presented to the trial court, was it not?
Well, of course, the evidence is what the trial court made its decision on. So, yes, I would say that there was a lot of evidence regarding the therapy and the involvement of the parties and as well as the child. But there was some conflicts among that testimony, and specifically the doctor, Dr. Rizzo, that started out treating the child when in April of 2012 and initially recommended that the father not have contact with the child, within several months had changed his mind and indicated that it would be to her benefit to have that.
But other professionals disagreed then, didn't they?
I don't think so. I think the only professional that expressed a different opinion, I think Dr. Snyder and Dr. DeLate both indicated that it was in the child's best interest to have a continued relationship with her father. I think the only party that differed from that was, the other doctor who indicated that at the particular time of trial that Ashley, or the child, was not ready for that particular relationship. So that she might be at some time in the future, but was not at that particular time.
Ms. Andrews, I understand your concern of putting the burden on the child to decide when there should be this contact. I also understand that you can't make a child want to be with their parent. I mean, that's just, unfortunately, is a very difficult situation. Can you suggest to us what you think the district court should have done?
Your Honor, I think all that my client was left with was access to medical and school records. He could not be included in any of the sessions with the child, and he could not be included in any of the decision-making for the child. So I would suggest at a minimum he should have been at least had perhaps joint legal custody so he could be involved in making decisions on her behalf, including some legal decisions on matters that came up, and having some access to some input into what is in her best interest.
And who would that input be with? The mother? Because
it didn't work with the mother, so I think it would probably have to start through a therapeutic.
It's a very difficult case.
Very difficult, yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
To please the court, I'm Mark Maloney. I'm the attorney who represents the appellee in this case. Unfortunately, this is a very difficult case. I think parties can at least agree, however, that Ashley, the young lady involved here, is a very troubled individual who has substantial and very important mental health care issues.
Was there ever any effort to have a guardian ad litem appointed for her?
Not that I'm aware of.
Was there a reason for that? Neither party sought it, or did the court ever bring that up as a possibility?
Neither party sought that. However, later on in the body of the case, the court did, as a result of the appellant's insistence, order that an individual PhD psychologist do an individual evaluation of the young lady, and he did do that. The appellant takes a position that the trial court inappropriately delegated authority to the minor child to determine when, how, and if any kind of parenting took place or parenting time took place with the appellant. That's really not accurate. They also cite, by the way, the Mark J. case in support of the notion that that would be an inappropriate delegation of authority. Really what happened here is the trial court, in what I would amount to dicta, said in its findings, the modification order should not be construed as not allowing Ashley, the minor child, if she so chooses, to initiate parenting time with her father.
How is that not delegating that right to the child?
It was simple, Your Honor. In the Mark J. case, establishes and analyzes when that takes place. Frankly, the Mark J. case said, look, you cannot delegate to a third party all of the opportunities and control over that particular issue.
How did that not take place here?
The child was only given the opportunity to make contact with the father, which she had to begin with. And his, that is, the appellant's, rights to demand visitation or contact or parenting time was extinguished. It was not as if she got to set who, what, why, where, and when. Frankly,
how did she not get to do that? If she decided she wanted to have contact with her father, you're telling me she couldn't have done those things?
I don't know that she could or couldn't.
Why?
I don't know if she was lucid to do so.
Do we have a determination somewhere that she's not lucid?
I don't know that we do or don't, Your Honor. All I can tell you at this juncture...
There was either a determination that she was or she wasn't.
I can tell you she testified, so that the trial court must have thought she was at some point. But I cannot tell you that a minor child has that right. All she had the opportunity to do was to say, I'm ready. I think mother could certainly have extinguished that at any time, because she would be the custodial parent under the order issued by the trial court.
Could have extinguished what?
Her opportunity to so meet or commence any kind of parenting time with the appellant.
So Ms. Andrews cites to a number of cases in her brief that essentially say psychologists can't be delegated the decision-making on parenting time, child custody officers, the other parent can't be delegated that. But in this case, as we've been discussing, it appears that it was left to a child to make the decision about when to have that parenting time. I get that she's 17, maybe 18 now. Where do you cut that off, if it's even appropriate? Would you let a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, if they're if they claim they're afraid of their dad, they don't have to have parenting time? Seems like we could get caught up in a real slippery slope on denying a parent parenting time because a child claims they're afraid of them.
I don't know at what age or even if that should be appropriate. However, I think the Mark J. case is instrumental in showing that that isn't inappropriate. In that case that the Nebraska Court of Appeals addressed, they had a very similar statement. In that case, they permitted the minor child to make some input into when and if a relationship with the mother in that case were to recommence, rather than to strike down that portion of the order from the trial court. The Court of Appeals actually said, look, the carte blanche authority given to the father, not parent, is inappropriate. It did not strike down the ability of the child to contact the mother. And in fact, went a step further and said, we're going to help you make that decision. We're going to give you a guardian ad litem in the meantime so that you can determine if that's in your best interests. So if that, in Mark J., Your Honor, is appropriate, I cannot see how this couldn't be.
Because you don't have the guardian ad litem, number one.
This court has the ability to order that, Your Honor.
So you don't, but the way it is right now, it's not right.
I don't know that it is or isn't. I don't know that at that age she needs a guardian ad litem or not.
You just told me you didn't know whether she was lucid or not either.
And I don't. I am certainly not going to stand here and tell you I am any kind of a psychologist or have any background that would permit me to do that.
Do you think a guardian ad litem would have made a difference here?
Would have made a difference? I do not know, Your Honor. I really don't. Truthfully, based on the facts that I heard and the testimony that I heard, I would say no. The trial court, I think, correctly found that a substantial change of circumstances took place. Those substantial changes of circumstance include a deterioration of the child's mental health in a significant way, a deterioration of the father-child relationship in a significant way, a deterioration of the communication between the parents, even about the child, and the disagreements between the parents regarding the child's mental health care and related issues. So I don't know that after all of that, guardian ad litem would have made much difference, frankly. The appellee testified that she and the appellant, at the time of their prior modification, were able to co-parent. And that ability deteriorated significantly along with their inability to communicate. They also couldn't work together to reach an agreement concerning their daughter's mental health care, leading to a virtual stalemate in that treatment. The child testified extensively about the deterioration of the relationship with her father. She wasn't comfortable in his care. She felt unsafe while in his care or in his home. She testified that he raised his voice at her nearly daily when he was providing care to her. And her feelings led her to experience suicidal ideations and thoughts and make, unfortunately, substantial efforts or actions towards suicide on three occasions.
Counsel, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you're running out of time, and I've got to take you to someplace where I've been thinking about this.
Yes, sir.
Well, get out of the box. I'm hearing you say to me that the parents can't agree as to what happens in this case. The court couldn't come to a conclusion to give any type of parenting time to the father. This isn't going to be a continuing case where the court can order the daughter to be in counseling or some sort, because as far as the court is concerned, the case is done until somebody files some other type of agreement. Would you not agree?
I think if I understand your question correctly, yes.
So at this point, if we would say that a guardian ad litem should be appointed and that they should file a juvenile action in the juvenile court, if she's still 18, that the juvenile court would have the authority to give her the help she would need, regardless of what either parent thought.
I certainly think that the trial court also had that authority, Your Honor.
Under what authority?
Well, certainly they can order whatever is best in the best interest of the child. And I think they have
in a dissolution action?
Concurrent authority in the district court.
In a dissolution action?
In a dissolution action.
Or a modification?
Yes, sure. I think they
do you have authority for that?
Come again?
Do you have authority for that?
Not in front of me because that wasn't an issue at the time.
The trial court, I'm sorry, the trial court could have ordered the, and a guardian ad litem at any point.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. Even on its own motion. If there's nothing further, I thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Ms. Andrews have?
Over.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry. Thank you. The case is submitted. All right, our final case for the day is in re Estate of Jurgens. And again, the final case is in re Estate of